This is the Robert Greenstein teleconference with Center on Budget and Policy for Wednesday, November 14th, 2012 at 10 a.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have our speaker in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is currently in a listen-only mode. We will be opening the floor for questions at the end of the call. I would now like to turn the conference over to Michael Leachman.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you all for joining today's call. I'm Mike Leachman. I'm the Director of State Fiscal Research here at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. We're here to discuss a major new report from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities and the Economic Policy Institute that examines income inequality at the state level. As you know, the report will be released at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time tonight. The report and related materials, including state-specific infographics, are available under the embargo. Please note that these materials and the contents of this conference call briefing will remain under embargo until 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time tonight. We appreciate your agreement to honor the embargo. Our speakers today are Elizabeth McNichol and Doug Hall. They are the co-authors of the new report. Elizabeth McNichol is a senior fellow with the State Fiscal Project here at the center. Doug Hall is director of the Economic Analysis and Research Network at EPI. Following their remarks, we'll turn it to your questions. I'll now turn it over to Elizabeth.
Thanks, Mike. Actually, Doug is doing the first part of the presentation.
Oh, excuse me.
Good morning, and echoing Mike's thanks for you joining us this morning. I think as everyone knows, over the last few years, the widening income gap at the national level has been the topic of considerable public attention, epitomized, I suppose, by the Occupy movements that arose in several cities. In our report, though, we've analyzed the growth of inequality in each of the 50 states and D.C., so this is a state-based report. And as you'd expect, the story is a little bit different in each state. We want to ensure by highlighting the income disparities at the state level that states have the opportunity to push back, to take some measures as they think about their upcoming budget cycles and head into the legislative sessions, take some policy measures to help address growing inequality. On our call today, we're going to cover four items. We'll highlight the results of our new study on the widening income gaps in the states. We'll explore the causes of inequality. We'll explore the reasons why growing inequality is a problem, and we'll highlight ways that states can push back against these trends. First, for the results. And we're going to actually look at three time periods, the first of which is basically a snapshot of the late 2000s. The second period will look at the recent trend from the late 1990s to the mid-2000s, and then we'll look to the longer-term trend from the late 1970s to the mid-2000s. Okay, so first for the snapshot of income inequality at the states right now. There are wide gaps between the richest households and both the poorest and middle-income households. First, to look at the gap between the top and the bottom. The incomes of the top 5% are 13 times greater than the incomes at the bottom. The worst states we see are Arizona, New Mexico, California, Georgia, and New York, where the incomes of the top 5% are 15 times greater, more than 15 times greater, than those at the bottom. We also see some distinct regional patterns. The income disparities are greatest in the Southeast and the Southwest, and they're lowest in the Great Plains and mountain regions. Just to highlight a couple of reasons for that, in the South, there's quite a high concentration of traditional low-wage, non-union jobs, whereas there's lower unemployment in the plains and mountain states that give workers a greater bargaining power for higher wages. Liz McNichol will provide greater detail about these causes later in the call. And of course, even though inequality is down somewhat during the recession, this is only temporary and has not altered the trend of the last three decades. And what we've seen in the most recent data suggests that those at the very top have rebounded quite nicely. All right, so now shifting to the most recent trend. So we're going to go here from the last full business cycle, from before the recession, from the late 1990s to the mid-2000s. And what we see here is that the lion's share of growth has gone, in fact, to the high end, whereas the incomes of low and middle-income households have stagnated or even declined. At the bottom fifth of the income scale, we see that average incomes actually fell by close to 6% for those in this category. And for those in the middle, rose by just 1.2%. Meanwhile, incomes climbed almost 9% for those in the top fifth and 14% for the richest 5% of households. Let me just reiterate that. We're talking about a story here where those in the middle are stagnant, and those at the top are seeing growth of 14%, while those at the bottom are seeing a decline of 6%. That's clearly not a recipe for shared prosperity. Excuse me. And this pattern is repeated in states across the country. In over half the states, the bottom declined while the top grew. In 45 states, the income gap grew. And in the remaining five states, inequality didn't decline. Shifting now to a longer-term trend, we see three decades of, from the end of World War II through the late 1970s, we experienced an era of shared prosperity. When the economy grew, incomes grew across the entire income spectrum. The rich, the middle, and the poor all did better. And yet, from the late 1970s through today, we've seen a stark reversal of that trend. The gains of economic growth have gone largely to the top of the income scale, leaving those at the middle and at the bottom at the side of the road. In every state, the top grew, often much faster than the bottom. Nationally, we see incomes of the richest up 71%, and coincidentally, that's $71,000. Meanwhile, the bottom is up only 7% over that 28-year period. And of course, these numbers are all inflation adjusted. In dollars, we're talking here about an increase for the top of annual growth of over $2,000, $2,546. Contrast that with folks at the bottom who saw income growth of $1,331 for the entire period, just $48 a year. Just to highlight that, we're talking there about growth that's nearly double at the highest level in 1 year what it was for those at the bottom level over the entire 28 period of time. The states where inequality grew the most over the last three decades were Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, Kentucky, and California, disproportionately there representing states, wealthy states in the Northeast. Turning it over now to Liz to describe why inequality grew.
Thanks, Doug. Not surprisingly, this trend is in major part the result of the way that wages and salaries grew over this period. Wages and salaries grew faster for those at the top of the income scale than for those at the bottom or the middle. And the major reasons for this sluggish growth at the bottom and in the middle are long periods of high unemployment, which means that employers didn't have to raise wages in order to attract employees. Globalization, where U.S. workers were competing for jobs with workers in low-wage countries. The number of good-paying manufacturing jobs in the U.S. has shrunk, while there's lower-paid service sector jobs have grown. There are fewer members of unions, which have traditionally boosted wages for low and middle income workers. And the federal minimum wage hasn't been keeping up with rising costs. Meanwhile, at the top of the scale, to some extent there was higher wage growth at the top as growth in jobs requiring higher skills outstripped the supply of workers with those skills. And higher pay for executives and folks in the financial sector also drove some of the growth at the top. And outside of wages, the growth in the stock market benefited those at the top who have more savings and investments. And our income measure, the census income measure, does not include capital gains, so we're only capturing a portion of that growth in the investment income at the top. Now let me turn to why this is bad for the economy and for the country. There are a lot of reasons, but I'm just going to talk about three of them. First, income inequality makes it harder for the nation to create the future workforce that we'll need in order to compete in tomorrow's economy. Let me explain that. Falling incomes make it hard for low-income families to lift themselves and their children out of poverty. Low-income children often struggle in school, and there's evidence that this affects their future prospects. And that's a problem for them, but it's also a problem for the country. Second, this income divide leads to a geographic divide, where well-off families live in the suburbs and poor families can be concentrated in certain parts of cities. As a result, property values are lower in areas with high concentrations of low-income families, so property tax collections, a main source of funding for schools, suffer. And support for state taxes for education, which could help even this out, suffers too. Because they're now living apart from low-income families, the higher-income families don't see these needs firsthand. And this can reduce support for investments in education, and the country's future can suffer when the workforce is not prepared for the jobs of the future. Finally, there's a question of fairness. Economic growth results from the contributions of people in all walks of life, from laborers to corporate executives. It's an American ideal that hard work should pay off. And if your place on the income scale determines how fast your income grows, that threatens this ideal, and it's discouraging for those not at the top. The good news is that states can push back against these trends, and the upcoming legislative session provides opportunities for states to do that. I'm going to discuss three policy areas: tax policy, supports for low-income families and workers, and labor market policies. First, state tax policy. Both the types of taxes that states levy and the amount of revenue they bring in can affect income inequality. State tax systems, as they're currently constructed, widen income gaps. Many states depend a lot on the sales tax, which takes a larger share of the income of low and middle income households than of those at the top. And in bad times, states have a tendency to raise the sales tax, and in good times, to cut the income tax. States are slowly recovering from a fiscal crisis of historic proportions. State revenues are still about 6% below pre-recession levels, but they have begun to grow again. And it's been my experience working on state tax policy that once we see this recovery of revenues, even if it's small, states are going to begin to talk about cutting taxes, in particular income taxes. And this in itself would widen income gaps. And tax cuts are premature when services are still suffering, due to the deep cuts in K-12 education and college funding. Tuitions are higher, class sizes are bigger. There's still a lot of restoration that could be done because of the cuts that were made during the depths of the recession. By preserving progressive taxes like the income tax, state policymakers can narrow income gaps at the same time as they are restoring services. Let me talk about two state examples. Maryland recently raised their income tax in order to maintain funding for education, for a rollout of increased education funding that had been in the works for a while. And you can compare that to Kansas, which last year did a large income tax cut, which is going to put the future funding for education and other programs in the state at risk going forward. The next area policy area is supports for low-income workers. This, what I'm talking about here are assistance for child care, job training, transportation, and health insurance, which can help low-income families get and retain jobs and move up the income scale. For example, states will be rolling out the Affordable Care Act over the next year or two. This is an opportunity for states to expand health care coverage to more low-wage workers. And workers who get health care when they need it will be more productive, will be able to stay in the labor force and move up the income ladder. Another area is labor market issues. The unemployment insurance system smooths the path up the income ladder by filling in gaps between jobs and providing income to those out of work. But some states have cut benefits in the wake of the recession, and restoring these cuts would strengthen the unemployment insurance system. In addition, states can build on recent efforts to modernize the unemployment insurance system to recognize that the workforce has changed and includes more part-time and two-earner families, for example. In addition, states that have not already done so could adopt a state minimum wage to put a floor under the pay for low-wage jobs, because the federal minimum wage is not regularly adjusted and doesn't keep up with rising prices. And states that have a state minimum wage could change it so that it automatically adjusts when as a result of inflation and rising prices. In conclusion, our report shows that all states face growing inequality. Next year's budgets are already being crafted in the states, and legislation is being prepared for the upcoming legislative session. Governors and legislatures that adopt policies now that narrow rather than widen income inequality can help their states recover more quickly from the downturn and grow their state economies into the future.
Thanks, Elizabeth.